Hey everybody, this is Andy, aka Love Retro BTW, across Twitter, Instagram, and Twitch. I do a podcast every Saturday called Cafe BTW, a morning gaming podcast, a retrospective look at the wonderful world of retro gaming, from interviews to guests. Join us every Saturday, like a Saturday morning cartoon, starting at 8 a.m., 11 a.m. Eastern. Also, if you're on Twitter, please join the brand new retro gaming community, a place to share, connect, and show your love for the retro gaming community. All the links are down below. And remember, enjoy the Gamers Week podcast.
Coming up on Gamers Week podcast.
You can dine like it's 2013 at New York's Angry Birds Cafe.
This does kind of sound like a thing that would be hot for like 3 months, right? And everybody's got to go and be seen there and get their pictures for the gram and their TikTok videos. And then it turns into a ghost town.
What's going to happen is after that 3 months, it's going to turn into a Angry Birds dispensary.
That's one way to keep the people coming.
We used to go watch the Rochester Raging Rhinos. Yes, that was their name.
Triple R's. All right. Yep.
I have a lot of questions about that name.
Everyone did. And eventually they just turned it to Rhinos, which is fine.
I know St. Louis is getting really, they're big behind the new football club that we got this year. The fact that they're doing so well is really helping draw more people in too.
What's the name of the team?
St. Louis City Football Club.
Okay.
Yes. Well, you get other teams like KC, Kansas City, Sporting KC, right?
Yep.
Then you've got such great names like Nashville and Minnesota or Colorado and Portland or LA Football Club. So it's the theme.
Wait, so soccer is too hoity-toity for mascots?
They have mascots, but not the team name.
Like the only thing that's close that I can see is like the New York Red Bulls. Okay.
But that's a sponsorship name.
Correct.
You don't want to be like the St. Louis Office Depots. Something like that. I don't really get the crowd going.
Right.
St. Louis Adam and Eve's.
Well, what kind of freebies would they hand out at the games? Mm-hmm.
Look, it's USB chargeable.
A dishwasher safe.
All right, are we ready for this?
Yeah.
I think we are.
All right. Welcome to Gamers Week podcast. Like the name says, we analyze the best, the worst, and the weirdest headlines of the past week in the video game industry. This is all for you, Donnie. This is episode 69 plus 12. Today is Wednesday, July 12, 2023. And my name is Ryan, a.k.a. Retro Game Brews. And I will be your host for this evening. But I have tonight two co-hosts that will inevitably find themselves having to become adult film actors and actresses to pay the bills mounting up from their celebrity lifestyles. Don't worry, though. I have on good authority where you can find their content. Please search for the ironically named Big John Bear, a.k.a. Donnie G Retro, and known for her hot wind, Camilla Breeze, a.k.a. Blue Williams, how you guys doing tonight?
Like a summer breeze blowing across the Sahara.
Well, you know what? Porn is a very big industry. It helps to have a niche. We don't kink shame, so.
And I'm not above earning that money, okay? So.
And it can only go downhill from here.
We apologize already.
All right, so why don't we jump in then to our reviews, reactions, and requests. First up from Frank Grande says, holy sh**, Crunchy Kong, that VIP was amazing. I had to pull over my car because I was laughing so hard.
Yes. Great job, Crunchy. That was fantastic.
It was. It was awesome.
Very well done.
At the Whistler says, I was the one person who bought a GameCube. It was all caps, so I had to do that. I still remember the GameStop employee's face when kid me happily pulled out $100 in change and bought it for Animal Crossing. One, two. Yep. And last up, Sutta Pootie Tang said, found this pod from the Elitist Peeps. Good stuff. Plus, it didn't give me diarrhea. Win-win. Sorry, we will try harder.
I have questions. A, one or two. Great name, even though that movie sucks. And has there ever been a podcast to give somebody diarrhea?
I mean, there's a lot of podcasts out there. You never know.
That just, it's like the frequency or whatever just hits the brown that note. Yes. And now it's time for the
what's the most you ever lost on a coin toss?
I mean, maybe a couple of Funyuns back in middle school.
The most you ever lost. A coin toss.
Yeah, I heard you the first time. Look, I don't really deal in coin tosses, okay? That's too much of a risk. We do have a weekly poll that people vote in for our podcast.
Call it.
I don't think you heard what I said.
Just look,
dude, it sounds like you've got too much Cheeto dust in your ears. I don't do coin tosses, okay?
You need to call it. I can't call it for you. It wouldn't be fair.
You know what isn't fair? Sega not putting out a video game console since 1999. You know, they came out with a mini Sega Game Gear? What's next? A mini Nomad? Besides, I didn't put anything up to lose.
Yes, you did. You've been putting it up your whole life. You just didn't know it.
Wait, is this because I said Ocarina of Time wasn't even that good of a game?
You know what date is on this card?
The date I lost my virginity?
1958.
Wow, I was way off.
It's been traveling 22 years to get here. And now it's here. And it's either heads or tails. And you have to say, call it.
Okay, what am I going to win here?
Everything.
What, like the Gamers Week podcast board game so I can play at home too?
You stand to win everything, call it.
You're really going to limit me to just two choices? In our VIP, we give people three choices and an other option. So they can tell us how much we suck for not posting the option they would have clearly put in the top three. Since you want to be a chode, I'll just choose heads.
Well done.
Woohoo! I'm going to the casino!
Don't put it in your pocket.
Excuse me?
Don't put it in your pocket. It's your lucky quarter.
Well, where am I supposed to put it at, Margaret? I don't have a coin purse.
Anywhere not in your pocket. Or it'll get mixed in with the others and become just a coin, which it is.
Oh, hey, look, a gumball machine. Hey, I got a quarter, too. All right. Hey,
well done.
Thank you. Thank you. I was racking my brain on something to do, and I had a couple different ideas, but then I started listening to that particular conversation. I was like, that's it.
Absolutely.
Yes, that was a good choice. Nicely done.
You are that guy's nightmare, by the way. For God's sakes, just call the damn card.
Every Monday on Twitter, we post our VIP, our very important poll. If you'd like to participate, follow us on Twitter at GamersWeekPC. So the question for this week's poll was, what is your favorite mini game of all time? Coming in at number three for this week was Mercenaries Mode for Resident Evil 4 with 15%. Number two was Chocobo Racing from Final Fantasy VII at 23.6%. And taking, I would say, the top spot this week, but Gwent from The Witcher at 25.1%. Now, an overwhelming amount of you said other at 36.3%. So let's take a look at some of the comments from the poll. Rabid Beeve says, Blitzball, this is the only answer. I disagree.
Hey, Blue.
I disagree.
Yeah, yeah, thank you. Blue. Thank hey, you. I see it. Thank you.
At Werner writes, says, I became quite obsessed with Orlog during my time playing Assassin's Creed Valhalla. That's up there for me. At Cat Daddy VGC says, Triple Triad, hands down. Mega Knight X says it's hard to pick one. Maybe the Joustus card game and Shovel Knight, King of Cards? And Snort Blap says, I'm the certified Pazak King from the Knights of the Old Republic. Yes, you can touch me. So based on the poll question for this week, Ryan, which minigame is your favorite?
My first inclination was to go with Chocobo Racing. I loved that. That was a lot of fun.
if you get really good at it, it's a breeze. So it's kind of fleeting in a way. So not going to go with that one just because of that. That one small flaw is that if you get good enough at it, you don't really have to do anything. But there's a lot of mini games out there that are particularly fun. The ones I don't like are card games. I've never liked them. I don't know why. It seems like the RNG is always working against my favor. And it just takes up way too much time in a game where I'm like, I just want to move the plot forward. I don't need to play
right.
So that leaves me with one mini game that I have enjoyed, and it's really simple, but it's super fun. And that is in Donkey Kong Country. When you collect three of the like icons for the animals, then you go into a special bonus zone.
That's your favorite?
That is my favorite.
Are you serious?
Yes, because I'm boring.
Those are the worst mini games. I skip the little golden animals on
purpose. You skip them? Oh my goodness.
Because I hate that game.
He's not you.
Right.
I mean, it's not really a game. You just run around and pick up as many as you can. Like,
right,
there's
and that's
no...
the challenge. Trying to get as many as you can, right? There's some replayability there. The music in that section is fantastic.
I mean, the music is fantastic in the whole game, but it's not much of a challenge.
Well, I'm sorry that my answer has disappointed you so.
It really has. I'm just shocked. I never
Perhaps
thought I'd hear
you
today.
Should go on Twitter and tell everybody how much you hate me.
I have a lot to do tomorrow, maybe Friday.
Okay.
We must bring this shame to light. Blue, what about you? What's your choice this week?
So I went with the game of cards in Evil Land 2. It's a card game, so Ryan would love it. But it's basically a Hearthstone-like card game where you have a board in front of you. There's an opponent. Your cards have different values as far as their health and their attack. And there may be a couple of special abilities. And you're basically playing your cards against their cards and see who wins. It's not that unique or special, but I found it to be really, really fun. And also, I enjoyed the challenge because in the early stages of the game, they give you a really, really crappy, wimpy deck to start out with.
Yeah.
So when you go up against the other challengers, it's really difficult. And when you finally start winning, you get cards from your opponent. So as you can win more, you get a much better deck until you beat them all and collect all 61 cards. And then you are the king, the winner of the game of cards. And I spent so much time doing that, so much time playing that game. I loved it.
Very nice. I don't think I've ever heard of that game.
Evil Land?
Yeah.
We've talked about it on the show before. It's the Zelda Link to the Past-esque type game where you go through different time periods, but the different time periods look like different eras of games. So like NES, SNES, PS1 eras, graphics, those kind of things. And it's a great game, so highly recommend.
Cool.
So what about you, Donnie? What did you pick?
I'm not a huge mini game fan. I figure that if it's not conducive to the story, then there's no point to it. I know I had mentioned to you guys that I like the little mini games that BioShock has, which when you're trying to solve puzzles, if you're trying to hack something, that's technically a little mini game. Some people might disagree with me, with both of you did. But
we're just asking questions. If a puzzle in game counts as a mini game.
Well, you don't necessarily have to hack anything.
Okay.
So I'm going to go with that one. It's a lame answer. I don't really care too much for mini games in video games.
Well, we'll allow it for purposes of this segment. We'll allow it.
Thank you, Your Honor.
She was nice to you and very, very rude to me.
Was not
she
mean
threw the book
to
at you.
On purpose. I was just genuinely surprised that anybody would pick that as their favorite.
Any freaking moron would pick that. Oh, my God.
I apologize.
I'll expect a lovely flower bouquet shipped to my house.
What are those death flowers? A bouquet of the death or locust or lotus or whatever it is.
Is this Deadly Nightshade? Mm, it tastes good.
I'll send it as an edible bouquet.
All right, so let's go ahead and shout out our patrons for the week.
We couldn't do what we do without the help of our gorgeous patrons. Here are the generous folks supporting Gamers Week on Patreon. And we have a new patron to announce. A big thank you and welcome to Mato1606. Woo! They'll be joining You Fall Before Me, Davey PGH, the Red Ox PDX family, including Shannon and Luke, Scala Zeal, Zach Huge Thanks, Number One Blue Sick Voice Fan, Sassy Sony, Evo Lust, Princess Kitty Mew Mew, Rai Rai's Secret Best Friend, Mega Retro Man, Gamma Troid, Michael Le Kite, Emo-esque, Bill Tucker, The Real Retro Game Bruce, Fruitcake's Number One Stan, Ducks with Thick Thighs, Zach Girthy Thanks, Zach I'm a Grower, Not a Shower Thanks, Zach Tom Hanks, Bob's and Dugnut, Retro Blast Pat, Great Siaman 81, BNT Zilla Guy, Geek With That, Johnny Boombots, Crunchy Kong, Sheriff Snacks, Frank Grande, Love Retro BTW, Steven Sand, Ramboski, Terry Kinnair, Ducks in Disguise, Jim and Colleen, Games with Coffee, and Hybrid Divide. If you like what you hear today, and we really hope you do, please consider joining us on Patreon. Your support helps cover the cost of producing the show, as well as other cool stuff we'll be doing, like prizes and giveaways. You'll also gain access to our weekly patron-only bonus cast called Gamers Week Uncut, Patrons with Benefits. Visit patreon.com/gamersweek or follow the link in the show notes to learn more.
All right, so why don't we check out our headlines for the week? Our headlines segment is proudly sponsored by the Retro Game Club podcast. It's a fantastic family-friendly retro gaming podcast. In each episode, Rob and Hugh pick two games to play and discuss, as well as news, interviews, and other topics. Right now, they're playing through Track and Field and any Laserdisc game. Visit them at retrogameclub.net or follow the link in the show notes.
I was wondering if the part of their playthrough requires them using a power pad for Track and Field.
Ooh.
If you got the power pad, the only thing I'm thinking about is my knees. Thank you, sir. We had to go there.
You may have another.
Right. It's not the power knee pads.
Although, you know, you could do the strat where you're on your knees and just pounding on it with your fists.
What? Say what?
On the power pad? So,
yeah, if
on
you
the
can.
Pad. Okay.
Yeah.
What else could I possibly have
right,
done?
Right. Oh, a pad. Okay.
Moving on. From Gematsu, Limited Run Games announces over 20 new physical releases at LRG3 2023. Limited Run Games announced over 20 new titles that will receive physical releases as part of its LRG 2023 showcase, including Castlevania Advance Collection, Gargoyles Remastered, and Jurassic Park Classic Games Collection. Limited Run also revealed that their Carbon Engine development is ramping up, with announcements that include Clock Tower, Gex Trilogy, Tomba, and more. These titles join Triple World DX, River City Girls Zero, and the original Shantae in LRG's catalog of revitalized retro releases. A series of all-new, LRG-funded, and published titles are also on the way. In addition to handling their physical releases, Limited Run will handle the digital publishing of the quirky RPG Another Crusade, the PS1-era-inspired platformer Doubleshake, the notorious Plumbers Don't Wear Ties, and RZet, the Jewel of Faramore, a platformer inspired by and featuring talent from the infamous Zelda CDI games of the 90s. Finally, this year's showcase includes a special collection of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles music soundtracks. Starting this summer, Limited Run Games will begin publishing a series of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles game soundtracks. New releases will launch every month from July 2023 through March 2024. Each collection will include a classic Turtles soundtrack on CD, cassette tape, and vinyl. In addition, special green vinyl pressings will be available in limited quantities alongside the standard offerings. Now, I did watch this showcase today. I applaud Limited Run Games for what they tried to do. They, quote unquote, went back in time to E3 1995 and presented their releases as to save E3 in 2023. They basically showed the LA Convention Center and how desolate it looks right now because obviously E3 is not there. E3 has been canceled. And their goal was to save by all these great announcements that they made today. It was going to save E3 2023. And at the end, he's like, oh, lo and behold, E3 2023 happens. Yay, we saved it. So that means E3 2024 is going to be saved as well. And you are dead wrong, sir. You are dead wrong.
Yeah, I think if I could go back in time to save something, I'm not sure E3 would be at the top of my list. Looking through this list of stuff, I did notice that people were really excited about the announcements. And then looking through the list of stuff that they talked about, it looks like there are a lot of bangers here. Mm-hmm. Personally, for me, I am most excited about Clock Tower because yes. I've never mm-hmm. had a chance to play that before. And I've always heard so much about it. So looking forward to that one. And then also the Castlevania Advance Collection, which I'm a little bit annoyed because I already bought it digitally and I would like a physical. So as often happens with limited run games, I end up double buying a game just so that I can have it physically. But I like those games well enough that I'm willing to do that.
Right.
I also think we predicted something a few hundred episodes ago where we said that the voice actor from Zelda CDI or Princess Zelda was going to make a return. And I really hope that that's the case with this one. That would be amazing. And Donnie, if not, this is your moment to shine, sir. You've done Bayonetta. Now you can do Zelda.
Yes. I still haven't seen any residuals or royalty checks from that. But when they started announcing this, like the guy was like, who remembers the CDI? And I'm like, CDI? Are you kidding me? Like, you're going to release something for the CDI? Like, only the very niche collector has a Philips CDI. They're releasing more stuff for the 3DO, so I was kind of expecting more stuff with that. But they did announce Plumbers Don't Wear Ties, which I've always been excited to play. But when they started announcing the CDI and the Zelda games, I'm like, whoa, what are you doing? I think you're going to lose a whole bunch of people, because even in 1995, I don't think the CDI was doing that great.
No, definitely not. Yeah,
there was a giant whooshing sound as everybody left YouTube.
Exactly. There were so many people in that chat that were just like, what's a CDI? Or like, I've never even heard of this. So it was kind of funny to see different people's reactions to it. But I will say that the game that they announced, which was the Jewel of Faramore, it looks promising. It has a mixture of the platformer, and then it has the animations of what the Zelda games had on the CDI. So I think it's a nice throwback to that. And I'm interested to see how they put that all together.
I'm just interested into the meeting where they decided that this was going to be a good thing. They're like, you know what people are clamoring for? The next Call of Duty? No, sir. Zelda CDI games.
Spits out his drink.
I guess in their defense, the whole like so bad it's good craze. That's people love that stuff. And you got to admit, nobody else has had the courage to take that as a source of inspiration and run with it. So if nothing else, I think it will definitely stand out.
It'll sell too. Plumbers Don't Wear Ties as well will sell. That will definitely sell. So by the way, though, if you own a copy of Plumbers Don't Wear Ties, maybe now is a good time to sell it.
To upload it. I'm also looking forward to the Ninja Turtles game soundtracks. Now, maybe I'd rather get them in a big collection as opposed to like a single, for every single game you release a vinyl, a cassette, and a CD. But I did see the cassettes, and I think I'm starting to get on a cassette kick. Like, I want to go and get a legit Walkman and just like start getting a whole bunch of cassettes, because I had some, I'd say probably about 10 years ago, and I ended up selling them at a garage sale.
Do they make new cassette players? Like they make new vinyl players?
I would imagine.
Because somewhere. I think releasing things on cassette, like sometimes you see pop artists release their albums also on cassettes, or unless I'm mistaken, I think the Celeste game released their soundtrack on cassette as well. And then there's these, but I'm thinking, what on earth are you going to listen to it on? Does anybody still have a working cassette player? So they must sell new ones, right?
So I'm looking at online, and I put new cassette players, and the first ones that come up are from a company called We Are Rewind, and they're selling for $164 and $159 respectively.
Freaking hell!
But I've also checked on Amazon, and there's some actual Walkman style that sell for $25.
Yeah, I'm going with that. I'm not spending almost $200 on a cassette player.
If I was going to invest in these TMNT soundtracks, which by having them come out every month, I don't suppose they're allowing you to sign up at the beginning for every month. They're going to make you go on and compete every month to try to get one so they don't sell out,
I would assume.
And, you know, Lord help you if you miss a month and it's sold out and then you have to go to eBay to try to complete your collection. But if I was going to invest in all of those soundtracks, I sure as hell am not going to get them on cassette tape.
And the other problem is that now if you get cassette tapes, you have to invest in pencils in case you need to rewind it.
Right. Or who pens. Has pencils anymore?
We do.
You're also somebody who probably owns a Philips CDI. So
you know what? That's the one system I don't. That one and the Neo Geo. I don't own those two.
There you go.
His white whale.
The white whale.
All right, next from Engadget, miffed Rainbow Six Siege player sentenced for swatting Ubisoft Montreal offices. A disgruntled Tom Clancy's Rainbow Six Siege gamer who called in a fake emergency to Ubisoft's Montreal office was sentenced this week to 3 years of community service, according to the Montreal Gazette. Yanni Wyan, 22, was handed the sentence on Monday in Paris following his call to authorities about a fake hostage situation in November 2020. Police say Wyan called in the hoax because he was angry he had been banned several times from Tom Clancy's Rainbow Six Siege. In response to the bogus call, a heavily armed squad of police officers surrounded the building. The officers secured the headquarters and closed several nearby streets before confirming there wasn't an active threat. Wyan allegedly called from his parents' house, using Russian servers to mask his identity unsuccessfully. After being charged, La Presse reported that Wyan pleaded for Ubisoft to unban his account. "Can you say that I am kindly asking the Ubisoft team to unban my account, please?" Wyan said. "I have put over $1,500 in cosmetic enhancements in my profile." The sentencing also includes Wyan's alleged part in a DDoS attack against a French government office and making threats against Minecraft developers. The convicted hoaxer will reportedly be required to compensate victims, undergo treatment for a mental health problem, and either work or undergo training, in addition to the community service. Magali Valence, Ubisoft Director of External Communication for Ubisoft Montreal, told the Montreal Gazette in an email that it acknowledges the court's decision. "In this trial, we were committed to representing the interests of our employees who were affected by this false hostage-taking alert at our Montreal studio. It was important for us to denounce this violent and unacceptable incident. Out of respect for our employees who were affected by this event, we will not comment further." I'm not sure this is the best way to get Ubisoft to unban your account.
I am kindly asking. Like, now I'm asking. I swatted you.
Yeah, but now I'm asking nicely.
Right. Now I'm bringing out the big guns by being polite is what you should have done in the first place.
Like, think about this too. When you swat, right, the implication of potentially having someone get killed because the SWAT team's going in there, guns ready.
Absolutely.
How f***ing stupid can you be? Like, to put people's lives at danger because your account got banned on a video game. Clearly, you probably did something stupid to get banned in the first place. And now you think it's okay to potentially put people's lives in danger in order to seek your revenge or something? Oh my God.
Yeah. And I was reading this and thinking that 3 years of community service,
right,
sounds very, very light. And probably the only reason he's getting off with that is because no one was injured in this ridiculous stunt.
Right.
But I mean, this is nothing new. People SWAT other people all the time because they piss them off in a multiplayer setting or something like that. You know, I can't tell you how many times I've heard about somebody being swatted in the past, hell, 10 years, 15 years. And you are right. It's so stupid and dangerous because somebody could end up getting killed. If you get somebody killed because you swat them, how is that going to make you feel?
Right. I think that what needs to happen is somebody needs to be made an example of that does this, that they end up getting, you know, attempted murder charge or something like that, or maybe passing a law saying that these are the minimum requirements for imprisonment as a result of swatting.
Yeah, it's no joke.
Right. This is no joke. The implication is that, again, that you could potentially harm someone or even kill them as a result of your actions.
Right.
And then to get off with 3 years of community service. Oh, great. The guy has to pick up stuff off the side of the highway. Ooh, so terrible. I'm sorry, that something needs to be done in that regard.
Well, a quick Google search shows that swatting is actually a federal crime and it's a felony. So
I think they should also add to his sentence that he can never touch a video game console ever again.
Ooh, that'll learn you, darn you.
Yep.
Well, I'm going to bet he played on a PC.
Touch a computer.
That's still my favorite part is that, can you ask them to unban my account? Like, no, hun, you've got a lifetime ban now. You're never going to play a Ubisoft game again. Lucky him. Only 3 years of community service.
Is that like scrubbing toilets or?
I hope so. Really, really disgusting toilets.
With a toothbrush.
His own toothbrush.
His own toothbrush. All right, next up from IGN, a new study compares classic games to silent movies, says just 13% are commercially available. New study with the Video Game History Foundation describes as the first of its kind, examined more than 4,000 video game releases in the United States before 2010, with a special focus on the Commodore 64, Game Boy, and PlayStation 2. It found that the overall availability of historic games is dire, with many held back by technical challenges, right issues, and other problems. GoldenEye 007 was finally re-released on Xbox and Switch earlier this year, has six separate right holders, including direct competitors Nintendo and Xbox. No One Lives Forever has three right holders, and according to the new study, none of them are entirely sure who owns what. It can be prohibitively expensive to port games to new consoles, with Limited Run Games CEO Josh Fairhurst estimating that just one port can cost up to $350,000. The result of these challenges is that only the most popular retro games are re-released to modern platforms, with the rest being available via vintage gaming shops, emulation, and digital archives. Modern services such as Xbox Game Pass, PlayStation Plus, and Nintendo Switch Online offer access to vintage games in return for a nominal fee, as do retro collectors like Digital Eclipse's popular Cowabunga collection. However, many more games remain tied to outdated hardware, and demand from collectors has driven up prices. Video Game History Foundation was founded by Frank Ifaldi in 2017 and is among the organizations leading the charge on game preservation as a culturally significant art form. It commissioned the study in part to advocate for making games available in libraries and other official archives, which the Entertainment Software Association has lobbied against through the Digital Medium Copyright Act, or DMCA, describing attempts to preserve games as hacking, among other things. The Video Game History Foundation notes that the next DMCA rulemaking proceedings is in 2024.
The ESA, they're hurting the team, aren't they?
Absolutely.
The reason they're saying that attempts to preserve games are hacking is purely so that companies can continue to withhold games and then charge us for them.
Right.
And as long as they're making the games available, fine. That is their right to charge us for their intellectual property. But if the games are not available anywhere, which this says 87% are not available anywhere commercially, but anything else, films, books, whatever, those are going to be preserved somewhere, most likely, because they are considered art and considered worth preserving. And so by doing this, the ESA is just going, nah, video games are trash. They're not art. They're property. They're for making money, and that's it. But that shouldn't be what you stand for.
Right. And I think the film industry went through something very similar to that many years back, where you're kind of hitting it on the nose with this idea of preservation and the fact that it's art. So these things were submitted to the Library of Congress, and there's films that are being held in their original form, even in the like extremely flammable, like old film style, right?
Right.
And in fact, Eastman, the guy who started Kodak, he had, and I think he still does, he has this huge collection of movies in his basement, or at least the estate does, that are, it's put under the right conditions so that the films don't deteriorate and all this stuff, so to make sure that it's good for the long run. One of the things that you run into as well is that there's going to be some day where CRT televisions don't work anymore. And the technology in order to play these types of games is not going to be available to, you know, people. Now, granted, that's probably, you know, 50 to 100 years from now, but eventually that will be the case. And honestly, these games, if we're talking about them being art, they should be preserved. That's why the Mona Lisa is still around, right? That's why the Statue of David is still exists, because it's something that people want to be able to view and to enjoy as part of the history of humanity.
Well, the Entertainment Software Association, based on their website, says our mission is to expand and protect the dynamic worldwide marketplace for video games. Marketplace. They don't give a shit about video games. They care about the marketplace on which the video games are sold, are bought and sold. The Game History Foundation, they're advocating for these games that you really can't find anywhere. Preserve them. Put them in, you know, like the Library of Congress or whatever, that you can actually have people come and play them and experience these things. Like, I know there's a multitude of websites out there that have older PC games that you could go on and play.
Speaking of PC games, I mean, there's a lot from the 80s that no longer exists anywhere.
Of course.
Somebody had it on a floppy disk somewhere, and those have been thrown out or destroyed or something. I remember we were talking about that on Twitter a few years ago, and people are like, hey, I remember this one game, blah, 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 blah. And it's like, yeah, that doesn't exist anymore. And that was really, really a sad thought. Mm-hmm. That so something so soon. I mean, it's been 30 years and something is missing. So with that in mind, I think you're right. I think it's places like the Video Game History Foundation, or even like the Strong Museum, where that's what they do, is they have a mm-hmm. collection of just almost, it seems like, almost every video game. And if you are somebody who is doing research or, you know, needs access to something like that, you can contact them and they'll let you borrow it. I assume not take it home with you for the most part, yeah. Right? Like, oh no, I'd lost it. And it's funny because there's like a listing on eBay that looks exactly like the one we had.
It's got your face in the profile picture too. Right.
But it's organizations like that that we maybe need to, as gamers, to invest more time in. And in fact, what I've heard is that there are a lot of YouTubers and people out there that are doing charity things for the Video Game History Foundation for that very reason. So for example, right now, Norm, the gaming historian, has an auction on eBay with like a press release version of the Tower of Power that was for the Genesis Mini when that came out. It was only given to people who were reviewing the game. So mm-hmm. it's fairly rare. So collectors, of course, are interested in it, but the proceeds are all going to the Video Game History Foundation. Last I checked, it was somewhere around, you know, $1,500 is where it's sitting at, and it's still got like 5 days to go. So that to me is a good sign that money's going to a good cause for a company that's going to lobby for this kind of stuff. It's probably a good idea as well.
Yeah. And this is just, I think, one aspect of how the Digital Millennium Copyright Act is just kind of handcuffing and holding the entirety of video game fans like in the grasp of its fist, because it's the amount of overreach and ridiculous nitpicking that goes on in name of the DMCA from YouTube videos. Can you stream this video game that you bought that happens to have music on it? Well, you got to be careful about the DMCA. How about your Twitter account? Because you posted something, a video that had music on it 3 years ago. Oh, nope, you're going to be banned on Twitter. Like, it's ridiculous the extent to which this act goes. And if there's one thing that gamers can agree on in this modern era, it should be that the DMCA needs to be drastically revised, if not done away with.
Yeah.
Agreed.
So something to look forward to next year and maybe even get involved with. Who knows?
I'll go to Washington. I'll lobby.
Yeah. Podcast road trip.
Mr. Rye Bread goes to Washington.
We'll do a live episode outside of the courthouse.
The only problem is it's going to be all of it. It's going to be Yoshi sound, Yoshi sound, Yoshi sound. Yeah. Coming through.
We're going to be on C-SPAN. We have members of the Gamers Week podcast taking the floor today.
These f***ing f***ers.
From Engadget, you can dine like it's 2013 at New York's Angry Birds Cafe. To give you an idea how old Angry Birds is, it arrived on iOS, webOS, and something called MAMO 5 before it even came to Android in 2010. Not only is it still around over 13 years later, but developer Rovio is being purchased by Sega for around $776 million. And on top of all of that, Rovio is opening the first Angry Birds themed restaurant on Friday, July 8th, called Iswi?
Sure.
Yeah. By Angry Birds. It'll be located within the food court at Tangram's New Mall in Flushing, Queens. Yes, a restaurant inside of a mall.
What year is it? Yeah.
Partnering with construction outfit SCG America, Rovio promises endless culinary treats, bright visuals, newest Angry Birds games, and interactive technology. It is decorated with Instagrammable, God, I hate everything, NYC-themed statue installations outside the entrance. You'll also see nest-like wicker and hanging chairs, bird paradise graphic wall coverings, and tropical plants on the shelving units where hatchlings, the baby birds, wander around. No menu was shown, but the press release mentions yummy seasonal holiday cakes and pastries, and the provided photo shows mostly desserts, candies, and other sweets. It's also hosting private parties in nests or rooms that will offer Angry Birds VR games and treats, including customizable Angry Birds themed gift bags for partygoers. We're not sure if people will embrace a restaurant based on a game that peaked around 2015 with the Angry Birds movie. In any case, Sega's purchase for $750 million shows the IP still has value, and the app has over 5 billion downloads to date. Plus, the restaurant has a 2013 vibe that could make it a big nostalgia draw. And I'm going to be the first one to tell you that this is going to bomb horribly. Are you kidding me? Sega, stop. Stop it.
Stop it. Get some help.
You have been making horrible decisions since the 90s, and you're doing it again.
This does kind of sound like a thing that would be hot for like 3 months, right? And everybody's got to go and be seen there and get their pictures for the gram and their TikTok videos, and then it turns into a ghost town. It doesn't sound like this is a pop-up. It sounds like they're putting way too much into the decoration for it to be a pop-up. But yeah, I do wonder what kind of lease they've got with that mall. Surely it's not a long-term lease.
What's going to happen is after that 3 months, it's going to turn into an Angry Birds dispensary.
That's one way to keep the people coming.
Okay, you know what? Do what you want. Do what you want with this whole thing. That's your money. If it works, great. If it doesn't, I told you so. But there's just a term in here that just, I see red when I'm like, Instagrammable. So is something Facebookable? Is this TikTokable?
So you're not going to go?
No, I definitely will not be going. I'm eagerly awaiting for the news release that tells me that this New York Angry Birds Cafe has closed down indefinitely.
What if it was a night trap cafe?
I'd be there in an instant.
What if there was a dress code and you had to wear a nightie?
Well, I mean,
Do you really think Donnie's concerned about that?
Yeah, I do. I'd do that for the gram, but I was hoping to dress up as like one of the scat members or whatever. But I mean, if it required me dressing up in lingerie with holding a tennis racket and strumming it to music, I'd do it.
And he's doing it for the gram. All right, so why don't we talk about our top three new releases for the week?
All right, first up is Oxenfree 2 Lost Signals, out on PS5, PS4, Switch, PC, Mac, iOS, and Android. 5 years after the events of Oxenfree, Riley returns to her hometown of Kamenna to investigate mysterious radio signals. What she finds is more than she bargained for. Oxenfree 2 Lost Signals is the mind-bending follow-up to the critically acclaimed narrative adventure game Oxenfree from Night School Studio. Play it as a standalone story or dive deeper by playing the original. It's up to you. As you play, you'll shape every step of the story through your choices. How you choose to deal with the supernatural events at hand will forever alter the future. Next up is Gravity Circuit, out on PS5, PS4, Switch, and PC. Gravity Circuit is a flashy, action-packed 2D platformer in the spirit of console classics. Follow Kai, a lone operative war hero who harnesses the mysterious powers of the Gravity Circuit, on an adventure in a futuristic world inhabited by sentient robots. Reminiscent of classic platformers from the 80s and 90s, with action dialed to maximum, channel your power into your fists and send foes flying, or grapple them to get up close and personal. In your quest, you will acquire many new powers, which will allow you to go even further beyond. And finally, Exo Primal out on PS5, Xbox Series X and S, PS4, Xbox One, and PC. The year is 2040. Sudden dinosaur outbreaks have engulfed the globe in a crisis that threatens humanity's very existence. Exosuit pilots, otherwise known as Exo Fighters, are in high demand. Take the Exo Fighter Aptitude Test and join the ranks of heroic pilots in their fight to stave off the extinction of the human race. Exo Primal is an online, team-based action game that pits humanity's cutting-edge exosuit technology against history's most ferocious beasts, dinosaurs. Exosuits are grouped into different roles, and players will pilot these exosuits to hold firm against overwhelming dinosaur swarms in online-only team-based action game modes. So out of these three, what are you in for, Ryan?
So looking at Exo Primal, to me this looks like Overwatch, but a one-sided version of Overwatch, and I've never really enjoyed the Overwatch games, so probably not going to go for this one. It's interesting. It looks really, really good as far as the visuals are concerned, but probably not my cup of tea. And the term online only, team-based action game.
Yep.
Yep. Done with that. Then we go to Oxenfree. I've never played the first one. So getting into the second one, obviously it looks like you can play the first one if you want to. So I don't know. It just doesn't tickle my fancy on this one. It looks like it's mostly a narrative-based game. I like to read, but not always while I play games. Which leads me with Gravity Circuit. That looks pretty darn cool. It reminds me of a lot of the 2D platforms that have come out recently. Shovel Knight, you know, Hollow Knight, Infernax. A lot of those games that have kind of taken the old aesthetic of what platformers were back in the early 90s and brought it to kind of modern modes or modern gameplay, if you will, a little bit. It looks good. I'm not a huge platformer fan, but I'd be at least willing to check this one out. I've been trying to get into more of those games because people keep recommending them to me. I'm not going to get into Hollow Knight just despite the two of you, but
you would hate it anyway. Yeah.
Which is funny. You love Mega Man 2.
I do. I love Mega Man 2. Actually, I love Mega Man all the way up till 7. 7 sucked, yeah. But
that's because he first played them when he was a kid. Now he's an adult and he can no longer introduce any new platformers.
That's correct. I've got a small corral and I can't fit any more in. But yeah, I think Gravity Circuit sounds like it's fun, and plus it's coming out on Switch, so I could probably get it pretty easily.
All right. What about you, Donnie?
Kind of going with Ryan this week. Exo Primal, it just did not look good to me. I just too busy, too much going on, and it looked like it was trying to be like everything else out there. You know, just we're adding dinosaurs. It's like, big deal. So Exo Primal, I'm out on. Oxenfree, I looked at some of the gameplay. It's not really a narrative, like there's not a lot of reading on there, but it's almost like an old school type adventure game, side scroller. Very stunning visuals. Looks like you've got to solve some puzzles. Almost like a Monkey Island type thing without the corny dialogues.
That's what made the games fun.
Shut up. Publisher Netflix. Netflix is publishing this game. So, and that's another thing that we talked about a couple episodes ago about Netflix getting into the video game publishing business and stuff like that. So I'm interested to see what the game could be, but that leaves me with Gravity Circuit. Gravity Circuit immediately made me think of Mega Man. And I love the Mega Man platformers. I'm a huge platformer fan myself. And if this is anything like the Mega Man joy that I get when I play those, I will be in on this one.
Nice.
Nice.
Blue, what about you?
Yeah, it looks like a clean sweep this week. Exo Primal, online team-based. No thanks. Oxenfree 2. Like you said, it looks like kind of like a graphic adventure game. I know that the first game is really celebrated. The early reviews that I've seen on this one seems like it is not good, which is unfortunate for fans of the first game. But that does circle me back around to Gravity Circuit, which, I mean, come on, 2D platformer. It's basically 2023 Mega Man. So yeah, that is 100% what I'm going to go with.
All right, so let's discuss our main topic for the week. From GameSpot, FTC moves to appeal this week's Microsoft Activision Blizzard court decision. Following Microsoft's recent win against the Federal Trade Commission in the U.S. federal court, the company may once again be taken to the stand. The Federal Trade Commission, or FTC, has moved to appeal the recent court order ruling not to grant the temporary injunction on Microsoft that the FTC was seeking. As reported by The Verge, the FTC has filed a notice that the committee is appealing Judge Jacqueline Scott Corey's decision. The FTC's full argument against the decision will not be revealed until the appeal is submitted in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. This news comes a mere day after Microsoft won its court battle against the FTC, with Judge Corley ultimately ruling that Microsoft's acquisition of Activision Blizzard would not substantially lessen competition in the games industry.
The court finds the FTC has not shown a likelihood it will prevail on its claim this particular vertical merger in this specific industry may substantially lessen competition, Judge Corley wrote in the ruling. To the contrary, the record evidence points to more consumer access to Call of Duty and other Activision content. Had the FTC won this case, Microsoft would have faced an injunction, temporarily halting the deal until the conclusion of the FTC's antitrust case against Microsoft that is slated to begin on August 2nd. As it stands now, the FTC must convince the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals to issue an emergency stay to extend the current temporary restraining order that is set to expire on Friday, July 14th. If the appeals court fails to rule before the deal deadline on July 18th, it is possible Microsoft could successfully close the deal on acquiring Activision Blizzard as early as next week.
Xbox boss Phil Spencer seemed optimistic about the future of the deal in a series of tweets issued shortly after the court's ruling, writing, "The evidence showed the Activision Blizzard deal is good for the industry, and the FTC's claims about console switching, multi-game subscription services, and cloud don't reflect the realities of the gaming market. Since we first announced the deal, our commitment to bringing more games to more people on more devices has only grown. We've signed multiple agreements to make Activision Blizzard's games, Xbox first-party games, and Game Pass all available to more players than they are today. We know that players around the world have been watching this case closely, and I'm proud of our efforts to expand player access and choice throughout this journey." When GameSpot reached out to Activision Blizzard regarding the FTC's appeal, a company representative stated, "The facts haven't changed. We're confident the U.S. will remain among the 39 countries where the merger can close. We look forward to reinforcing the strength of our case in court again. Even if the company's ongoing tussle with the FTC goes in its favor, Microsoft still has a few more hurdles to clear. The company remains under scrutiny by the U.K.'s Competition and Markets Authority, who moved to block the deal over concerns about its impact on the cloud gaming market. Following the latest ruling, however, the CMA stated it is willing to renegotiate its current stance."
So they asked Mom. Mom said no. Now they're going to ask Dad.
It's amazing that they would be like, "Oh, yeah, well, I guess if the U.S. says it's okay, then it's okay."
Right. Well, and I think that they got flack in their own country. Like, well, Europe approved it, so why didn't you guys approve it? But the temporary restraining order is set to expire on Friday, July 14th. So it is possible that by the time this episode comes out, there will be an update to this story and this will all be outdated. But
man, that's kind of weird. Like, we've been talking about this for a while, and as early as next week, that deal could be completed.
I know. Ryan, remind us again what your prediction for the year was.
That it was going to fail miserably, but still... That is still up in the air.
So you're telling me there's a chance.
Right. Right. And it's going to be going down on July 14th. So Xbox is going to find out about what's happening on July 14th.
I get to see my daddy on July 14th.
Bill Pence is going to be like, "I told you to put the X back in the box."
You know, it's funny because part of the judge's statement when they were handing down the decision was that the FTC did not prove that Xbox is going to make Call of Duty and Activision games exclusive to their platforms.
Right.
They said there's no indication that they're going to do that. On the contrary, it looks like they're going to be available on more platforms than ever. So wouldn't it be hilarious if it went through and then they said, guess what? Call of Duty really is exclusive.
Suck it.
Yep. I wonder, is there anything the FTC could do at that point?
And honestly, no. Xbox or Microsoft would be well within their legal rights to do it. But also just the fact that Sony has put them on such blast lately for this stuff. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be surprised if there was a little bit of a vindictive, or in their mind, a little bit of comeuppance due towards Sony as a result of this.
Xbox boss Phil Spencer would be saying, "Nana, nana, boo, boo, stick your head in doo doo." Call of Duty is an Xbox exclusive. So if you want to play this game, come on over to Xbox.
Or maybe even better, Call of Duty is on all platforms now except PlayStation.
Except PlayStation. Oh,
it's coming to Switch. We're revitalizing Stadia. We're going to release Call of Duty on it, but not PlayStation.
What's coming up for the Apple Pippin and
the Philips CDI?
The Nokia N-Gage.
The N-Gage. What's interesting to me is that this is going so quickly now, because the biggest thing that the judge did is she appealed or shot down the injunction that said that they had to pause everything when it came to the acquisition piece of Activision Blizzard. Like that needed to pause. And that was what the lawyers for Sony put into place, or rather the FTC put into place, was saying basically pump the brakes. And so this judge said, nope, there's not enough evidence that would suggest that this needs to be stopped immediately. But that doesn't mean that down the line, there couldn't be something that would block this merger, because there's still a section of the legal proceedings that they have to go through that approve the merger. Even though they've gone through the merger and they've done it, they still have to pass that one bar, which could be pretty tough. But this is a good sign for Microsoft in the sense that one judge said, guess what? There's not enough evidence. And a lot of judges don't want to do that to another judge. Often when it comes to appeals, it's based off of not what the decision was per se, but what the legal proceedings and how the law was interpreted for that. So a lot of times what you're going to see is that an appeals court's probably going to say, I'm not going to touch this. Or, you know, even if it goes to the Supreme Court's going to be like, well, there was no problem with the case. There was nothing in the case that would say the defendant and plaintiffs were treated fairly, all this stuff, right? Mm-hmm. So down the line, though, that merger decision from the, I think, SEC, the Security and Exchange Commission, and then I'm talking out of my butt on that one potentially, but
you made it all sound very smart. I mean, I think right. I'm a lawyer now.
Yep.
So that is still coming to bear. So I'll give you an example. Years ago, AT&T and T-Mobile had a merger deal that they put together, signed, sealed, delivered, ready to go. And then the U.S. government said, nah, we're not going to let you do that. So that's still something that Microsoft is going to have to do when it comes to Activision Blizzard. But again, you got many wins on the way to this thing happening. And this is a big one for Microsoft.
Right. I mean, when the FTC suit was announced, that was Microsoft's response is, well, this is just going to speed things up in our favor.
Right.
And turns out they were right. Mm-hmm. But it is kind of interesting. Like Donnie said, we've been talking about this for forever. And then I went back and looked at our old episodes because I thought it was one of the very first ones that we had ever talked about. And it was episode 5 when this happened.
Dang! Wow.
That was when this was announced. And now we're at episode 81, or 69 plus 12. So in some ways, the story of this merger has been the story of the podcast, even when we have been bored to death of discussing it any further. It is the story that has followed us this entire time.
What happens when the deal ultimately goes through or gets struck down? Like, where does that leave us? Like, who are we?
It's going to be like when you finish off a really good RPG and it's done. You're like, what do I do now? The story's over.
I was so invested in the characters.
We're going to be depressed for weeks. You know, the episode's just going to be like, hey, we're Gamers Week.
Right. It's like, you can't move on to a new game. We can't move on to a new main topic. We just, you know.
Just keep hoping that some spark of life from this particular topic will come back into the headlines.
It's okay. It's okay, because I'm sure that whichever way it goes, there's going to be endless appeals and new types of suits going through. So, and hey, if you can count on any company at all to continue to get sued over and over again, it's going to be Activision Blizzard.
Well said.
Thank you, Activision Blizzard. Before we move on, let's take a quick break to talk about our sponsor. This segment is proudly sponsored by the Leetest Podcast. It's a show where three friends and occasional guests play games about video games, including trivia games, game show games, and more. And here is this week's trivia question. Due to the trademarking issues, the Sega Mega Drive was renamed the Genesis for distribution in the United States. However, that wasn't the original chosen name for the system. Atari, who was in talks with Sega at the time for distribution, rejected the originally chosen name of the system because it was too violent. What was the original name? Tune into the Elitist podcast this Wednesday to hear the answer. You can find the Elitist on your favorite podcast platform, and we'll also have links in the show notes.
And I was today years old when I heard that Atari was possibly going to be distributing the Genesis.
Actually, I was not aware of that either. And I do Gaming History 101 every week. So
time to turn in your professor badge, sir.
Apparently.
Yeah, I'm a blank on this one. I've never heard of it.
Too violent, huh? Was it going to be like the Sega Psychopaths or something?
The serial killer.
I'll give you a clue. It's an object.
The Sega
Redacted. The Sega Redacted.
Blue is much closer on this one.
Oh, no way.
The
Redacted.
We're getting there.
The potato peeler?
That's it! That's it!
What is it?
Yeah, I don't know.
It is a weapon that would have been used in the French and Indian War.
The Sega
Redacted.
Very good!
No! Ooh.
What?
I think it's a good thing they renamed that.
Yeah, I said
maybe
so.
Maybe not for violence reasons.
Right. I was like, that wouldn't have aged well, right? Thank you for coming, students. Please take your seats. Welcome back to Professor Rybrandt's Gaming History 101. And in today's lesson, we'll talk about one of the few genres of games that gets an eye roll almost immediately when you bring it up. Widely seen as boring and overly self-important, the edutainment or educational video game has long been the ire of video game players. Today, we'll talk about its roots, its progression, and finally the tropes that were incorporated into regular games since. Now, I would imagine you both have some opinions on educational games.
Yup. The only time educational games were any good is when you got to play them at school because it meant you weren't having a normal lesson. But exactly. If you're outside of school, I don't want anything to do with them.
All of this, what she just said. I mean, unless I'm playing, what's the guy that does the, looks up the butts?
The proctologist
yes,
simulator?
Yes, unless I'm playing proctology simulator, then.
You got to have the right peripheral for it.
Oh, Donnie's got it. Don't worry.
I'm my own peripheral.
Now, learning for most of us growing up was the last thing that we wanted to do during our entertainment time. Spending all day at school, hunched over a desk, either trying to be a good student or showing apathy for the whole thing. Going home, we wanted to engage in brainless button mashing and avoid having to actually learn something. Ironically, games by their very nature, though, are educational tools. They teach us problem solving, pattern recognition, strategic thinking, quick decision making, perseverance, and more. Now, that being said, some games are more overtly trying to teach you something. Whether it's history, math, project management, religion, or others, educational games cover many topics to gamify the process of learning. Gamification, as a term, helps people learn because most people are either visual or hands-on learners, better known as kinesthetic. And being able to simulate a task or use game elements for problem solving means better retention of what is learned. So tell that to the next person who tells you video games rot your brain.
Gamification sounds like a Bushism.
A Bushism?
Yeah.
Like strategery?
Yeah.
It's a gamification, you know?
Well done, sir. Well done.
Thank you.
Now that we understand the purpose of educational video games, let's start with one of the first examples. All the way back to 1964, IBM partnered with the Westchester County of Cooperative Education Services to develop the Sumerian game, a text-based strategy game centered around land and resource management around 3500 BCE Sumeria. Designed by fourth grade teacher Mabel Addis, the game was first introduced to a group of 36 graders. Players were tasked with allocating workers and grain, accommodating for the effects of poor choices, random disasters, and technological innovations. The game was successful enough that they came out with a later version that included the use of a projector with images on it to partner with what was happening in the game. Doesn't that sound just riveting?
I'm dying to play it.
So educational games weren't only just for children. In fact, the U.S. military for years was using educational games to help train soldiers for real-life combat situations. As we discussed in our VR Gaming History 101, one of the first VR games was a wireframe tank simulator that allowed tank operators to traverse difficult scenarios. NASA's also used flight simulators to train their astronauts on how to use the controls of the space vehicles that they were piloting. It's such a popular way to learn, even Star Trek referenced it in its famous discussion of Captain Kirk being the only one to ever pass the Kobayashi Maru simulation using a 23rd century version of a Game Genie. So in the late 70s, many rudimentary educational games were released for the Atari 2600, the Fairchild Channel F, the ColecoVision, and Intellivision, mostly consisting of math-based games like Math Grand Prix and Word Zapper for the Atari 2600, Alphabet Zoo for the ColecoVision, Math Quiz 1 and 2 for the Fairchild Channel F, and the Electric Company Math Fun for the Intellivision. Ooh. None of these sound exciting as far as title names.
But you had me at Electric Company. That was a popular kid show.
Yeah, but Math Fun. That's an oxymoron if I've ever heard one.
Now, interestingly enough, though, after the North American video game crash of 1983, several PC-based video game developers switched over to educational games as a way to encourage parents to invest in their system. But that surge quickly died down with the release of the Nintendo Famicom /NES, which focused mostly on action-based video games. In the 1990s, with the emergence of CD-ROM computers and games, there was a flood of educational games that hit the market, more focused on using gameplay to help players learn. Example of that would be Oregon Trail. Think great everybody game. Got dysentery, right? But one of the most popular examples of an educational game that asked players to build their own metropolis was, of course, SimCity. They were tasked with dealing with resource needs, city planning, budgeting, disasters, and adaptive learning. Did you guys play SimCity back in the day?
Oh, yeah.
No.
Blue is just not into this educational crap.
No way.
I love SimCity. I love SimCity 2000. I thought those were fantastic games. And you don't realize you're learning while you're playing. But the model that SimCity would introduce would soon become the future of educational video games, relying less on providing tests and quizzes and focusing on creative thinking and problem solving to achieve in-game objectives, not making the players aware that they were learning while having fun. Games like Civilization, Age of Empires, Total War, and others were mixing education with entertainment. Nowadays, many games rely on puzzle solving as a core mechanic of gameplay, sneakily teaching players to learn while they traverse a rich story that gets them engaged for hours. But it doesn't just stop there. Classrooms of today have been moving into a more gamified way of educating students by asking them to use technology to learn. Blue, you're an example of that. I myself, in my capstone course in college, was tasked in running a virtual shoe manufacturing plant in a game that was used by universities all over the world each semester. Our team at a state school finished fourth place out of thousands of college, and we even beat out those nerds at Harvard. What's up? Whoa.
Look at you. You were the ultra nerds.
Now, special education has also been using educational video games to cater to specific needs for their students, providing equal opportunities for them to learn and communicate. One example is the game Dreamware, which is a device that uses visual, auditory, temperature, and vibration sensory integration training to help capture students' attentions. So overall, video games and education seem diametrically opposed, but game developers have figured out how to sneak it in.
You had me at vibration.
So to wrap things up, while many of us groan at the idea of educational games, with the evolution of such media, many of us use games to learn real life skills every day. So next time you see an educational game like Aerobiz Supersonic on the store shelf, give it a try. You may never know what you might learn.
That's a tough sell. That's a tough sell.
So thank you for attending Gaming History 101. Just a reminder, if you have ideas for a story you'd like to hear, send us a message at gamersweekpodcast@gmail.com and we might feature your suggestion. So that'll do it for us here at Gamers Week. Thank you for listening to episode 69 plus 12. aka 81 of Gamers Week Podcast, and a big thank you to Retro Game Club Podcast, Elitist Podcast, and Love Retro BTW for sponsoring this episode. Don't forget to check out their links in the show notes. If you want to connect with Gamers Week, follow us on Twitter at Gamers Week PC. Email us at gamersweekpodcast@gmail.com. Visit our merch store at gamers-week-podcast.creator-spring.com. Or if you want to do it the easy way, follow the link in the show notes and join us on Patreon at patreon.com/gamersweek. Finally, since you made it all the way to the end of the episode, please leave us a rating and review to let us know how we did. We really do value your feedback. And while you're there, consider subscribing on iTunes, Spotify, or your podcast platform of choice.
You know, I may not know what, but that doesn't make me want to rush out to go to a.
Okay.
Should we have a closing I can actually put in the show?
You should just do bee and then you sing. Can I get a closing?
Okay, Dick Manley.
Yes. I love my given name. I've earned it.
Dick Manley, Big John Bear, and
Camilla Breeze.
Camilla Breeze, how could you forget my name?
Sorry.
Please, if you ever do that and you become famous for being a comedian, please go by the name of Camilla Breeze so I can laugh every time I see him.
I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon, but I will keep it in mind.
There's always hope. Yeah. All right. Good night, everybody.
Yeah. Good night.
Welcome to Gamers Week Uncut.
Welcome to Gamers Week Uncut.
Welcome to Gamers Week Uncut, patrons with benefits. This is the unscripted, patron-only bonus cast with less editing and more dirty jokes. We don't know where the conversation will go, but we're sure it will be weird.
This fish just went right on my nipple, and I'm just like...
I Google Street Fighter 6. The first search result that comes up is people think they can see Ryu's dick in the Street Fighter 6 reveal.
Listen up here, kids. You're not going to want to get one of those VDSTDs things, right? Make your dick fall off. When you go, grab a pro. You'll be doing it for America.
That was perfect.
If you want to hear weekly episodes of our patron-only bonus cast, join us at patreon.com/gamersweek.